joining us. My name is Katie Heinle, and this is the Fisheries Podcast, a weekly podcast that shares the stories of the amazing people and projects that make up fisheries science. If you haven't already, follow the podcast on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod. If you're the generous sort, you can be like Brian, Jody, Jerry, Garrett, Ben, Janet, and John and support the podcast on Patreon with either a recurring or one-time donation. This helps us pay for various parts of the show. If that isn't your thing, you can also purchase Fisheries Pod shirts, hoodies, stickers, and face masks on our Teespring store. Today I'm interviewing Niall Clancy about his new book, Keeping the Last Best Fishery, Advice from Montana's Biologist to the Next Generation. Niall was born and raised in western Montana, earned a bachelor's degree from Montana State University, a master's from Utah State University, and is currently a PhD candidate at the University of Wyoming. He has previously worked for Montana Fish, Wildlife, and Parks and has been an active member of the Montana chapter of the American Fisheries Society for the past 10 years. All right, welcome to the podcast, Niall. I'm really excited to talk to you about your book. First and foremost, who published this book?
Yeah, hi, it's good to be here, Katie. So this book is published by the Montana chapter of the American Fisheries Society. And I just want to say right off the bat that all proceeds of this book go towards the chapter's Resource Action Fund, which funds things like stream restoration or public outreach events, as well as the Wally McClure Scholarship, which funds undergraduate and graduate students in the Montana chapter.
With that, can you just give a short synopsis of what this book is about?
You know, in the fisheries profession, we usually get into these jobs right out of college or grad school, and we tend to have a lot of technical skill, but, you know, not so much practical experience. And even if you're able to get some practical experience in the field as a seasonal technician or something, a lot of things that no one has is practical experience working with the public or, you know, working with other biologists to solve problems, navigating the pros and cons of, you know, agency culture, forming effective partnerships with, you know, nonprofit or other agencies, things like that. And so a lot of that information gets passed along informally, you know, by our bosses, mentors, other colleagues. And so this book is really my attempt to record some of that advice, which I did in the form of written interviews I conducted with about 23 veteran fisheries biologists from across Montana. And the questions I asked really focused on the quote unquote soft skills, you know, the interpersonal relationships, that we just don't get that much technical training in the profession. And so, you know, one thing that I wanted to say is that the things that we talk about in this book, they're not the advice of a 29-year-old grad student with only 10 years experience in the field. You know, nobody wants to hear that. These are pieces of advice from veteran biologists with, oh, probably somewhere on the order of 650 to 700 years of cumulative experience. So I just wanted to say a lot of what we talk about, it's not me, it's advice from these well-respected and longtime biologists.
I guess that kind of gets at my next question, which is where did your idea for this book stem from? So I'm going to switch that a little bit to why did now seem like the time to collate this book and actually, how do I want to say this, help disperse this knowledge to everybody else?
Well, I don't know if now is the time. The time was 6 years ago when I first thought of doing this project. So it just took me that long to actually put this thing together. But, you know, growing up, so my dad is he's a now retired fisheries biologist. But, you know, when I was growing up and getting into the profession, he'd give me a lot of pieces of advice or stories about some past experience. And that really, I felt like it gave me kind of a leg up. It was really invaluable advice. And you can't really quantify it, but, you know, it just felt like I had this understanding of where the profession had come from that a lot of people don't get. And so this is really just my attempt to record those pieces of advice from a lot of different biologists and to provide that to young professionals. And so it's kind of, I had this built-in mentor, and at some point, I think it was in early 2018, just thought, you know, what if everyone could have that?
Yeah, that's awesome. I think one of my favorite parts about being a technician was just bothering the biologists about, like, how did they get to where they're at? And just realizing that there's so many different ways to be successful in this career. So I'm really excited to read through and see what all the people you interviewed have to say about being a successful fisheries biologist. So.
Well, and you and I, during different times, both worked for Caleb Bullman, fish, mm-hmm. wildlife and parks biologist in Miles City. And he's featured in this book, and it doesn't say, you know, at least one thing he didn't say was, I hate getting bothered by a young technician. So I think we're both in the clear on that one.
Right. All right. How, of all the biologists, even just like within Montana, there's obviously a lot to choose from. So how did you choose who to reach out to for this book?
This was not any sort of a comprehensive process. You know, I basically relied on who I knew from being in the Montana chapter of AFS for, I don't know what it was, 5 years or something at that time, as well as people that my dad had known or that I knew were well-respected biologists. And so one thing is that people might notice that there's some missing biologists that are really, really well-regarded people in Montana. And this is purely based on me probably not knowing them in 2018. Mm-hmm. So, you know, my apologies to the many great biologists that are not in this book. One thing I wanted to mention, though, is that as I was going through, I was noticing it was, you know, I was trying to interview veteran biologists, people with a lot of experience, and there were not that many women that had, you know, more than 10 years or so in the field in Montana at the time. And so I really made a concerted effort to interview some of the women who had been in the profession for at least a decade, if not, you know, going on 15, 20 years. But that was something that there was just a lot fewer women in the field, you know, and there still is. Mm-hmm. And that's, we can get into it, but, you know, that's something that's certainly a problem in the field, as I'm sure you know.
Yes, well aware. Okay, so given all of these interviews that you did, I was curious, what were some of the main takeaways that you got from what came of this book?
So one thing is following up on that question about women being underrepresented in the field. You know, I think a lot of that comes from the culture of fish and game agencies, but also university fish and wildlife programs. And for example, I was just at a University of Wyoming student subunit meeting just a few days ago, and it was the 20 or so people, and there was probably one woman there. And I think a lot of that just comes from the fact that these are a lot of hunting and fishing bros, and you know, a lot of women don't feel necessarily welcome in that space. And so I think doing our best to change the culture of that space and not making hunting and fishing and being part of that culture a prerequisite to being in the field, that would at least put us in the right direction.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess even at some level, because like I feel like I'm somewhat involved in the hunting and fishing culture, but in a very different way than I think is popularized, where I want to go hunt just because I want to know where my food comes from, not because I want to get a big trophy deer. And so I think not even just like including women, but like a more broad perspective within the field of fisheries, I think just saying that that point of like broadening who feels welcome will apply to more than just women.
Okay, so I just want to hop on here and add a little footnote, because I don't know that Nal and I really did this topic justice during the interview, but I just wanted to make clear that there are obviously many reasons that historically and even currently state agencies within Montana and likely other states don't represent the same diversity that exists in the populations. And hunting and fishing bro culture, while is definitely part of that, is not the only reason, and perhaps not even the most important one, that we don't see diversity in biologists. And I guess I just wanted to make it clear that while it being difficult to find women to be interviewed for this book is not the only diversity problem reflected in Montana, I think most of the people interviewed for the book were white and probably able-bodied, and none of them that I know are outwardly part of the LGBTQ community. And so obviously there's many aspects of diversity that have just been lacking historically and currently are as well. And if this is something you're interested in learning more about and thinking about changing going forward, you should check out any of the Fisheries and Diversity podcast episodes, especially the one that was put out most recently on inclusive hiring practices, because I think those are the steps that are going to be important in moving forward towards more diverse, equitable workplaces and giving us the ability to solve problems more effectively with diverse perspectives. And so we didn't really do that topic justice, and it's a little off topic from this book. I just wanted to add a little more context with that. Anyways, back to the interview.
Yeah, and something that probably a good idea is if it wasn't a bunch of dudes saying what they think the problem is, like I'm doing right now, but actually hearing from women and hearing what are the problems and what are some potential solutions.
Yeah, for sure. But still, I appreciated in my skim of the book that that was at least mentioned and recognized that women were not as well represented as would be otherwise. And perhaps even like diversity more broadly, I think Montana biologists, the makeup of Montana biologists has kind of struggled with that. And I'm hoping it'll continue to improve in the future.
Yeah, and I think in general, it's not a just a Montana problem. It's
Right.
very widespread in fish and game agencies across the country. And that kind of gets to another point that I want to make, which is, although this is an interview book of Montana biologists, I think it's very broadly relevant, a lot of the pieces of advice to anywhere people manage fisheries and probably even wildlife as well. A lot of it, dealing with the soft skills, that stuff is pretty universal.
Yeah, for sure. Were there any other main takeaways you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, so one of my main takeaways was that, a lot of the most controversial things or most difficult projects to get implemented, they got accomplished not because someone was, the most charismatic or the most intelligent or most skillful. They got done by the people that were able to form a group that all really cared. They cared the most about getting something done on the ground that would benefit the fishery. And I think that is something that really came through from a lot of these interviews, is that really caring about what you do is the most important thing. And having the perspective that this isn't about me, this is about advancing on the ground fisheries management and conservation. A quote that I've heard attributed to the late George Holton, who was I think he was the first president of the Montana chapter of AFS, first or second, I can't remember now. But one thing that he said was that you can get a lot done if you don't care who gets credit for it.
Wow, I love that quote. That's a great one.
Yeah, that was a pearl from him for sure. And then the last takeaway that I'll mention is that there is a game fish culture or a sport fish focus in most state fisheries agencies. And while that is certainly still the main impetus, or should be the main impetus for the profession, if we just broaden the culture to include more non-game fishes or those that aren't traditionally fished for, that could go a long way in conserving some of these species that we just don't have a lot of information for or aren't popular because they don't taste good or they don't take a fly. So I think, one of the pieces that a piece of advice that a couple of people mentioned are that it's kind of up to us young people moving into the field to broaden that game fish culture and say, hey, these other fishes are also worthy of conservation. And not that there aren't plenty of people that, recognize that now, but we could certainly do more.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, given all of these interviews and everything that you've done, what was your favorite piece of advice that you heard while putting together this book?
I think my favorite, and again, there were a number of people that alluded to or mentioned this throughout the interviews, was that you need to have a genuine respect for the legitimate needs of stakeholders. So ranchers, farmers, anglers, developers, these are people that are just trying to make a living out in the field, and usually they want to be good stewards of the land. And I know from my own experience working with a lot of private ranchers is that they're the ones on the ground, and they really do care about the land. And they may just not understand that, you know, oh, if you do this, it has a negative impact on this stream. And I know from experience that, you know, I'll go into these muddy prairie streams in my own work and pull a seine through something that the rancher didn't think that there was much in there, and pull out, you know, 10 species of little minnows or suckers, and they love it. They think it's super cool. And I think just knowing that these people aren't trying to have a negative impact and genuinely respecting that they also have needs from the land, that's something that can get you a long way, because when you have a genuine respect for someone you're working with, you can usually find a compromise that'll work for both of you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm trying really hard not to gush about how great prairie streams are, so I'm just going to leave that off. But I'm
preaching to the choir, sister.
Okay, I think the only thing left to answer here, and I'll double check that there's nothing else you want to say, but where can people actually find and purchase this book?
So people can find this book at Amazon if they're so inclined. And there's also going to be a free PDF if people just kind of want to browse it. That'll be available on ResearchGate if you just search Keeping the Last Best Fishery. And then people, if they want more of their contribution to go to the chapter, they can order it directly from the book printer. And I'll have a link to that on my website, which is nileclancy.org.
Awesome. I will include those in the show notes so that it's easier for people to find. Yeah, is there anything else that you wanted to talk about with this book that I just didn't think to ask about?
Well, I guess I'll just mention that people may notice the cover art on this book, which is extremely beautiful art done by Dave Ritter, who is a longtime Montana biologist and excellent fish artist.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I meant to make a note about making sure Dave got a shout out. So I'm glad you said that. All right. Well, Niall, the so-called tough part of the interview is over. It brings us to our final five questions. This is a group of questions we ask each of the guests that come on the show. The first one is, what is your favorite fish?
Columbia slimy sculpin.
The second is, what is your favorite memory from your career so far?
Yeah, I'll give you two. So the first one was something that we did in the field, which was a stream restoration project that I've been working on for my PhD. And just knowing that this restoration project wouldn't be happening if we weren't here doing it, and then seeing this incised stream go from something that didn't seem to have a lot of life to having an abundance of fish, and seeing frogs go from not seeing any to being fairly abundant along the stream after we did this restoration. That was something that just seeing that on the ground impact, it was very meaningful. Another thing was that I got to be in the audience when my dad received the Career Achievement Award from Montana Chapter AFS. And, you know, that was something that was just really neat, seeing the respect for his work over the his 40-year career. That was pretty neat.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right, what is your dream job and or location?
I would like to be in Missoula, Montana. What's the quote from A River Runs Through It? I don't know if I agree entirely with it, but it is a pretty nice place to live. So yeah, some sort of applied research in Missoula would be great.
Yeah, for sure. All right, if money was not an issue, what is one project you would like to work on?
Yeah, I think if money weren't an issue, there's a dam on the Milk River called Vandalia Dam. And for those that don't know, the Milk River is a tributary to the Missouri in northern Montana. And Vandalia Dam actually stops the upstream migration of a number of different large river fish. And so I think working to implement a fish passage at that dam, that would be something that would have a lot of benefit. That'd be pretty cool, but I'm sure it'd be very expensive as well.
Awesome. All right. Our last question is, if there's one pointer principle you could have programmed into everyone's head, what would it be?
We should care about non-game fish more.
It's a great piece of advice. I'm always preaching that as much as I work on cutthroat trout.
Oh, I love me some sculpin' and suckers.
Awesome. Well, Niall, thank you for coming on the podcast today. It's so nice hearing about the book, and I'm really excited to read it. If people want to get more information about the book, get a hold of you about your PhD or anything like that, what's the best way for them to do that?
Well, I'm not quite sure why people would want to get a hold of me about my PhD, but if they do, my email is niall.clancy. That's niall.clancy@uwyo.edu, University of Wyoming.
And I'll include your website link as well, and all the links for your books so that people can purchase it and support good causes from the Montana chapter of American Fisheries Society.
Thanks, Katie.
I hope that you all enjoyed this episode. If you'd like to get a hold of me or the podcast, you can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at Fisheries Pod, or send us an email to feedback@thefisheriespodcast.com. You can download past, present, and future episodes on your favorite listening app, or stream it from Spotify or thefisheriespodcast.com. And don't forget, you can help support the podcast with a monthly contribution through Patreon or by rocking some awesome Fisheries Podcast shirts, hoodies, and stickers available on Teespring. I'm Katie Heinle. Thank you for listening to this episode of the Fisheries Podcast, and remember, we should care more about non-game fish.